Blog Talk Radio.
And you're in the G-Zone with Giovanni Gelati. Gio, what's going on today?
Sorry about that. I was having a little trouble kicking it off. Thanks, Big Daddy Abel. Today we have Kim Vogel-Sword and Anita Higman. She'll join us in the second half hour of the show. Yesterday we had Kevin L. Stabinski on. That was a night show. So he started off the week. Tomorrow, Nancy K. Grace will be on with us at 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And that'll take us, that'll finish out the week. We won't be back on until after the July 4th holiday. We come back with Christy Lynn. She's coming back on the show. It's always a lot of fun with Christy Lynn. Becky White, and then also we have Helping Hands Pro's Thirsty Thursday party on July 9th. That should be another barn burner. So that's our schedule. Oh, and I also wanted to thank everybody, any Canadians, tomorrow is Canada Day. So I hope everybody has a good time and enjoys themselves. Anybody who's listening today that will make it the rest of the week, please have a very nice July 4th. All right, enough of that. Let's bring in Kim Vogel-Sword. Kim, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Thanks so much.
And you are, according to your bio, a best-selling, award-winning author, highly acclaimed for her gentle stories of hope. So why are your stories so gentle? Please don't tell me there's no car crashes or explosions in your books.
Well, you know, there is a lot of conflict in my stories, both physical and emotional. But what I try to do is tell the story in a way that I don't glorify the difficult things, but show what the change, a difficult situation, the change can bring into a person's life. I hope that makes sense. It's kind of hard to define, actually.
No, because quite honestly, you described a movie I was watching last night. I got this movie, and I'm like, I wanted to give it some time. My daughter said it's okay. And I'm watching it, and in the beginning, there's violence, but it was gratuitous and over the top. And mm-hmm. I like to see things go boom, and it just I felt that there was no need for it. So mm-hmm. you don't by not glorifying it. I mean, it's are these like what do they call them, cozy books, koozie, whatever. You allude mm-hmm. to the violence, but it is not something that you really graphically describe.
That's correct. That would be a good way to put it.
That's fine with me. I'm good for that. I think that's good. You got to leave something to your reader's imagination, right?
That's right.
So, yep. What's your current project? What do you have going out now? I mean, it seems like you have a very active. I was on your Amazon author page. You have a very active page as far as releases go. So not only do you have a work out now, but you do have others in the pipe.
I do. I'm actually working on the novel that will release in the fall of 2017. So I'm really, working way in advance, but I have several others that are already finished and, ready to release as time comes along. The most current book that readers can get their hands on right now is book two in the Zimmerman Restoration Trilogy, which is titled When Grace Sings. And the third one in that trilogy will be out in September. So that's just around the corner, and that series will be complete.
Wow. What walk us through the storyline here. What do you have going? Without giving too much away, but.
Okay, yeah. Well, the Zimmerman Restoration Trilogy starts with When Mercy Reigns, and it opens with a young woman who was sent away from her old order Mennonite community because she became pregnant out of wedlock. And the mother is just deeply shamed by that. And so she sends her daughter away to have the baby, tells her to give the child up for adoption, and then she can't come home. Well, Suzanne does not come home. 20 years later, her siblings insist that she come back because she's become a nurse. Her mother has been injured in an accident and needs care, and they want her to come back and take care of Mom. And so Suzanne does return with her grown daughter, with her, and the family has no idea that this daughter has even existed. So this is how the trilogy opens. It's a lot of emotional angst, a lot of family secrets, a whole lot of baggage that they have to work through to find healing, because what they believed about their sister was not true. she has told lies essentially to her daughter, let her believe that, you know, she didn't have a family. So there's just a lot of secrets coming into light. When Grace Sings, which is the second book, is the daughter, Alexa, has finally settled in with her new family, and she's chosen to stay with the grandmother and turn the old farmhouse into a bed and breakfast right in the heart of Old Order community. So Alexa is pretty much starting over with a new life, a new location, a new family, a new vocation, just a whole lot of changes for her. And she's just one of the characters in that story. There's actually four point of view characters in When Grace Sings, and each of them are dealing with a few ghosts from the past and trying to make a new start. So just a lot of emotional trauma. Think soap opera. And that would probably be pretty close. I do call this one independent trilogy. You can read When Grace Sings without having read the first book, because it will make sense. But if you do, you're going to miss out on a lot of the family dynamics and the background that play into book two. So I really do advise readers to read book one first and then book two.
Okay. When you tackle something like that, where it's a trilogy or any other work, because you've got a lot of projects behind you. Are you, as far as your writing style goes, are you a big outliner, or are you more organic, somewhere in the middle? And how is it that you are able to consistently turn out content like that?
You know, when people ask me about my writing style, I always cringe just a little bit, because I usually get the raised eyebrows and the, oh, right? I'm not a plotter. I don't plot it totally. Even to try to do an outline or write a short synopsis is very challenging for me. I'm very much a character-driven writer. For me, I get this person in my head who tells me this is what I want and this is why I can't have it. And the story just grows from there. I guess writers are the only people that can have people living in their head telling them stories, and they don't commit you for it. You just make it work for you. But that's pretty much what it is. I get these characters, and I just sit down, and they tell me their story, and I just kind of go along and record it. I know how wacky that sounds, but that's what works for me.
That's nice. So when you're doing something like a trilogy, you don't, even though you're doing book one and you know it's a trilogy, you don't really have two and three in your head yet.
Well, usually when I'm writing a story, there's a secondary character that endears himself to me and just seems to beg to have his story told too in its entirety. Because I usually write standalones, I have to tell that secondary character, be quiet. This is not your turn. That was what was really nice with the trilogy, is as I wrote the first book, I could let Alexa, who was a secondary character in the first book, say, I want my own story, and tell her, okay, you're going to get it. And then secondary characters who stepped up in that second book became main characters as in conjunction with the main characters from the first two books, or the third book, to close out the trilogy. So it just kind of happens for me intrinsically. I don't have any other explanation than that. It's just the way my brain has been hardwired since I was a little girl. I honestly thought every person in the world had characters in their head until I hit junior high, and the kids told me, no, you're just very, very weird. Until then, I thought it was the norm. So I'm just glad it works.
That's nice. Now, if you're doing a standalone and you have a secondary character that you really, really like, do you make a new project for them, or do you ask someone if you can do a project for them?
Well, at the moment, because I don't write for myself as much as I write for a publisher, I have to kind of follow what they would like for me to do with my projects. And if there's a lot of clamor for a second book, in two different occasions, we've been able to honor that for readers. For me, I would love to take those secondary characters every time and write their stories, just because I enjoy spending time with the characters, and I know that readers enjoy going back and revisiting those characters. It doesn't happen as often as I would like, partly because of the contract and partly because of time constraints. It does take time to write a story, and there are so many different stories rolling in my brain that want to be told. I think I could live to 200 and never get them all out.
That's pretty interesting. Do you write these ideas down? Do you have them in Word documents, or do they just stay floating around in your brain?
Well, I have a notebook that, you know, I jot just quick notes. Like I said, I don't plot, so I don't write out the full story, but I'll write down a character and what I perceive as their issue. And or some little snippet from history. In my historicals, I love to take some little snippet from history and throw a character into that situation and see how they react to it. So it's not so much about the historical event as it is the person's response to the historical event, how it affects them. And so I have a folder of unusual historical snippets as well. So, you know, if I ever run out of story ideas, or if I'm in between projects and I need to come up with something new, then I can open those notebooks and glance through there and see what jumps out and asks to be told at that moment.
That's pretty neat. The way you prefaced all that, have you gotten in trouble from people for discussing the way you write?
No. The only trouble I've ever had is when I try to write a proposal for a publisher and they want to see a full synopsis, and that for me is like pulling teeth because I don't know the end of the story until I write it, and an editor would really like to have that information. That is one of the blessings of having so many books already published, is that an editor can look at my history and say, okay, well, we know that she can write a full story. And they give me a little bit of slack on that because they do understand my writing process.
That's good. That's good. Because it seems like you have a very nice following on social media, and that people really are into you and your characters. Now, tell everybody where they can find you on social media.
Well, you can find me on Facebook under Kim Vogel Sawyer, my author name. You can also find my website under that same name, Kim Vogel Sawyer. I'm also on Twitter. I have a few things up on Bursey, where you post the pictures. You can tell how savvy I am on social
Pinterest.
Media. I can't even.
Pinterest. I love Pinterest.
That's the one. Thank you so much. That was coming up with Picturesque, and that I knew that wasn't right. So I'm just kind of bouncing around in different places out there. I'm a grandma, okay? I didn't grow up with social media, so it's all new to me. But I do have to say, I really enjoy Facebook. I enjoy that ability to communicate with readers. Writing is just so solitary, and you spend your day at the computer with imaginary friends. It's really nice to be able to pop over to Facebook and talk with some real flesh and bone people from time to time.
I love Pinterest. Sometimes we have, we're fortunate to, our posse, we get together quite often. Sometimes we'll just have, like, everybody's like, what are we going to bring? And sometimes we'll just have, everybody will bring something that they found on Pinterest. And it's a lot of fun.
Okay.
It is a lot of fun. Yeah, one time they didn't appreciate one thing I made. I did a vodka-infused strawberries. Covered in chocolate, and drizzling chocolate's not a strong suit of mine. So I just dumped it all on them. That's all, you know.
Yeah.
Too much chocolate's not a bad thing. The problem was I left the strawberries in the vodka for more than a 24-hour period. So when they ate one, it was was more than enough. So I couldn't
save
all of them.
So the party took a turn, huh?
No. It was just that they were so loaded that they it was a little much. So I've stuck to other things when we've done these kind of parties. But it's always a lot of fun. And I like Pinterest a lot. Yeah. So anybody who wants to follow me on Pinterest,
I need to be a little
please.
More active there, I think.
Well, they got some great recipes on there. They also have a ton of awesome crafts. I do. I get to do some stuff with my grandsons, and there's a lot of neat stuff to find on there to do, no matter what holiday, or just to do stuff. So I have a good time with that. Cool. Yeah. So what do you do to chill?
My daughter really enjoys the craft side. What do I do to chill? Well, I like hanging out with my grandkids. Obviously, I like to travel with the hubs when I have time to do so. I enjoy quilting. I like to dabble in crafts. I enjoy, I'm working on a crazy quilt right now, all the different stitches. Putting that in there, I like to sketch. Read when I have time. Yeah.
What kind of folks do you read? And when you read, or do you read for enjoyment? Is that something that you can do possibly? Because I've interviewed some folks and asked that question, and they have a hard time reading anymore because they're looking at it in terms of like with a writer's eye.
Right. It's really hard to turn off the inner editor. But I do love to read, and I read mostly historical just because I like traveling into, you know, times of the past. A book that will turn off my inner editor, oh, that's just bliss. but I'll reread books that I've read it before that I really enjoyed. To Kill a Mockingbird, the Chronicles of Narnia series, a book called Christie by Catherine Marshall. If I know I want to just be taken away and not have to think, I'll grab one of those old familiar favorites and just get lost for an hour or two and really enjoy that. Don't have too many of those hours these days, though.
That's nice. I read some of them back in school, but it isn't anything that I've picked up in the last long time. I'm stuck with, I read like current thriller stuff.
Uh-huh.
That's what I have, but I don't. I just read for fun. It's it helps relax me. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Pretty cool. Do you go to conferences and speak and stuff like that, or you just go to conferences for enjoyment?
I do both. I like to attend conferences. You always learn something, come away with something you can use, and I also really enjoy teaching at conferences. And I do a lot of travel and speaking for women's events. As well, it's just great to be able to get out and be with people, readers, other writers. I'm an introvert by nature. It will wear me out, but it also gives me something that really benefits my soul. So I enjoy that whenever I can do it.
That's nice. So what do you speak about when you speak?
Well, when I do my speaking, I basically talk about how God works in our lives, how every step of the journey can be used for our good and for His glory when we turn our lives over to Him. When I speak at conferences, I really like to teach on characterization and focusing on the positives of the writing life. Things have changed quite a bit in publishing in the last couple of years where anybody who wants to get a book out there can do so through ebook publishing. But those that want to go through the traditional channel, you know, it may take a while to find the publisher. And so I like to talk with them about that whole journey and not giving up, how not looking at it as rejection, but as redirection to the right place for you and your story. So try to be as encouraging as I can. Writing can be a really tough business. And I just want to encourage those that love writing, that really want to do it, to hang in there and see it through.
Yeah, what are some of the top things you think a writer needs to do for a reader when it comes to creating strong characters?
Well, they need to have a strong motivation for their character. For a reader to connect with the character's journey, they need to know more than what the character wants. They really need to know why it's so important to them. Because that gets you down into the nitty-gritty of that character psyche and just makes it a lot easier to root for the character. I guess I use John Wayne a lot as an example because sometimes his motives in the movies were a little questionable, but we always knew why he was doing what he was doing, and so you cheered for him anyway. And that's what we want our readers to do with our characters. We want them to care about them. We want them to cheer for them. We want to see them all the way through for the completion of their story.
Pretty neat. What kind of, when you discuss that, what type of reaction do folks give you?
Well, it's interesting. It's for several, it's like a light bulb goes on. They hadn't really thought about the why of it. We focus so much in the technical side of writing to get the conflict in place. You need to have a goal and something standing in the way. But we don't talk enough about the motivation. And for me, that truly is the key part of making it an enjoyable reading experience for the person who picks up that book.
Yeah, I would have to think that's important. I mean, the character is doing something for a reason. And what's the reason? So it's a good way to start out.
Yeah.
Wow. How into it do you get when you're at the conferences and you're speaking about that? Do folks really really enjoy what you're discussing and really get into it? I mean, is that a big moment for you when you see a light bulb go on somebody's head?
It really is. You know, I taught fifth grade for a lot of years before I started this writing gig. And as a teacher, when you see your students get excited about something and they take what they've learned and they apply it, it really gives you a thrill. And the same thing happens at conferences when, you know, I'll hear from somebody who attended one of the workshops, will come back to me later and say, oh, this has just changed the way I look at my characters or changed the way I feel about writing. It really means a lot to me that I've maybe been able to impact them that way. I guess
that's
all
neat.
Of us want to make a difference somewhere.
Yeah. When you do the other speaking more on the spiritual side, how open do people get when you're discussing stuff like that? And is there a lot of cathartic moments?
You know, there's a lot of heartfelt moments there. I try to interject a lot of humor when I'm actually doing the speaking event because I think that's important not to get too deep and keep them there. You've got to lighten things up. But afterwards, the one-on-one that I will have with people who come up and trust me enough to share some of their heartaches with me and trust me. With that, that's very important to me. I don't take that lightly. It really is a tremendous privilege to be able to listen and then to pray with people and leave them feeling more hopeful than they were when they came.
Pretty cool. How often do you speak? Can folks find out about this on your website?
Yeah, there is a calendar on my website. I speak usually, because of the writing schedule being so tight, I would like to speak more, but it usually ends up being about once every 3 months. I do have an event coming up in Indiana at the end of this month, or at the end of July, beginning of August. I'll be there for 2 days, and really looking forward to that, and then have some shorter events at libraries and so forth elsewhere in Kansas. So would really love it if, you know, people are in the areas to pop by and say hello.
Nice. Have you noticed any trends since you go to writing conferences and stuff? Are you noticing any trends in any of the genres or just overall?
I don't know if you would call it a trend so much as there's just this shift in how you get published. I have to kind of laugh sometimes and not making fun. I just find it kind of amusing. I self-published my first novel in 2000, the year 2000, and had no clue at that time that was considered vanity publishing. I just did it because I wanted my book to be out there. And the response to that from writers was a little cynical. And that took me by surprise. Now, ebook publishing is the rave. You know, do it yourself. Don't rely on a publisher. You know, why you have to be on somebody else's timetable and so forth? Just do it yourself. That seems to be the big thing to do. And, you know, that hasn't been that long ago that I kind of felt like people looked down their nose at me for going that route. So, but that is a trend that has taken me by surprise, and I think it's great because I do think it opens the door to a lot of people, and I do like that it's taken away that whole mindset of the vanity side of things, or that, well, you couldn't get published the real way, so, you know, kind of a mindset. There's some really great independently published novels out there, and it's good to see that success for people. I think the other trend, particularly in Christian fiction, is that they're trying to do more of a crossover into secular. It used to be when you picked up a Christian fiction book, there was a really, really strong, just right there, spiritual thread. There was no doubt in your mind that you were reading a Christian novel. And there are still some of those out there, but they think there's more of the, they want it more subtle, so that there's a spiritual thread that you have to kind of dig to find it, so that it's not so much in the face hoping that it will cross over into the secular market. So those are two things that I've really noticed in the years that I've been publishing.
That's pretty cool. What kind of stuff would folks say to you back then? So you were part of the revolution.
Well, I don't know about that so much as it was kind of an accident, but it's definitely been an interesting journey. I guess like anything else, over time, you know, as technology has changed and family units have changed, I think even from the time I started teaching, how much the family unit changed. Life, we're just constantly morphing into something else, and you just kind of have to go with it.
Yeah. Let's see. I think we have someone else here on the line. Is this Anita Higman?
Yes, it is.
How you doing? Welcome
Hi,
to the
Anita.
Show. We're
Hi.
With Kim Vogel Sawyer. Kim, Anita.
Hi.
There you go.
I didn't realize that was you on the line. It's nice to be on the air with you.
Well, then when he said you were coming, I said, I'd like to stick around and say hello.
Well, that's lovely. Lovely. I liked everything you said and agreed with everything.
Oh, well, good.
All right. Anita, do you have a hard-hitting and big question for Kim or not?
Hard-hitting question? No, not really. I just really do agree with you that Christian publishing has changed. I've been in the business 30 years, and my goodness, it has changed so much in the 30 years, I don't even recognize it anymore. And much of what you said, all of it, was absolutely correct. It's changed a great deal. So it's been an interesting journey watching it. It's been fun, but there have been a few painful moments, too, trying to adjust, you know.
Changes aren't
now,
always easy.
Yeah, I ask this question of every Christian author that comes on the show. So let me ask Kim first, and then Anita, you're more than welcome to answer. When you're writing one of your, you're taking care of one of your projects, how do you know where to toe the line? Like, where do you feel too much is too much, where you're hitting a preachy point? Is that something, because you've done it so many times, you kind of feel it's just organic to your characters? Or from the beginning, because you talked about doing a characterization of your characters, is it something that it's imbued in their person as you write it? How is it that you know when to stop?
Well, for one thing, you want it to, whatever you put in the story, to matter to the story. Author intrusion will pull a reader out of a story faster than anything. And taking, you know, stopping the story to preach, that's author intrusion. And so anything that happens in the story needs to be intrinsic to the character's journey, not necessarily my thoughts and feelings. How I keep from going into areas that I don't believe I should as a Christian writer is that my mother, when I started writing, I promised my mom I would never write anything that would embarrass her or that I would be embarrassed for my children or my students to read. And so that gives me the other side of my boundary as well. It kind of keeps me on that middle path where hopefully I provide a well-rounded story with believable characters with a journey that people can relate to. That's my goal as a writer, and that's all you can do is your best.
Nice. Go ahead, Anita.
Oh, well, I agree with that. I always wanted to create books that not only, you know, the grandmothers out there could read, but also moms, you know, granddaughters, I mean, just everybody could read with, you know, with nobody getting worried there was going to be something offensive, you know, with graphic scenes or you know, language is offensive and those kinds of things. So that maybe not preachy, but things that are left with hope. I always hope that I entertain, inspire, and challenge. That's kind of always my goal, and so I hope I'm able to fulfill that. But on just on a secondary note on that vein, each publisher is a little different on that, too. Depending on some publishers, there's such a wide range of different kinds of Christian publishers, some more conservative, some lean a little more liberal and allow a few more things. Some want more of a stronger spiritual message with perhaps even scripture and the characters praying. And so it just really depends on the publishing house, too, on how much they want. But even that has changed over the years, too, because, as Kim said, there's publishers who want that novel perhaps to be crossover, so the message has to be a little bit more subtle.
Okay. Because we don't talk about certain things here on the show. You mentioned you've been in the industry for like 30 years. Did you start, like, was this a pre-K type thing? Or is this like you started writing like around the kindergarten time? Because we don't...
That's real sweet. I really appreciate that. No, I started somewhere around 30 years old, and I've been writing ever since. I wanted to start much younger, but I honestly didn't have the confidence to do it. I just was always talking myself out of it, and even though it was a dream, and later I did feel it was a real calling, I just always had reasons not to do it. Well, basically, fear of failure. You know, it's not fun to fail. So I guess you could say my career was sort of failing towards success, you know, and I did a great deal of that and still fail sometimes now, too. You know, sometimes my reviews are just stellar and gushy, and sometimes they're not so gushy. So, you know, this is a hard business. It's definitely not for the faint of heart.
Yeah. Well, sometimes reviews are a little strange anyway. I mean, if you notice, I've seen a few that are pretty nasty, and I thought, you know, what else does this person hate on? And I've clicked on their name and looked at some of their reviews, and they hate on, like, blenders and all kinds of stuff, you know. It's just mm-hmm. who they are. It's not so much what you did, you know. And I find that some poor reviews, most of them aren't really specific to the work. They got some other kind of axe to grind, which is kind of stupid. So I don't know. I kind of discount the ones. If it's a 2 or 3 and it seems like it's got something to it, I'll pay a little attention to it. But man, if you have a bunch of 4s and a bunch of 3s and you have very few 2s, I think that tells you what's going on, you know?
Yeah, that's well said. Now, Kim doesn't know what we're talking about because all of her reviews are really good.
Oh, right.
You really do get a lot of great reviews. Just marvelous.
I get some stinkers, too.
Do you?
Oh, yeah.
In the grand scheme of things, you guys have been doing this. You have so many projects out there. Does this really bother you? I mean, you're both very... You both have a very nice social media platform, so you're out there with your folks, and people kind of understand by now who you are and what you're doing, and you've really drawn them in. But does you get a review as a bit of a clunker? I mean, does that really get you bent, Kim? I mean, does that put a hurt on you?
Honestly, I try really hard not to look at reviews because it. No matter if it's really good or really bad, it will shut me down. If it's really good, I'll think, oh, I'll never write that well again, and it shuts me down. If it's really bad, I'll think, what do I think I'm doing? I can't write, and it shuts me down. It's better for me just to hang with my characters and do what I'm doing rather than worrying about what people out there are thinking.
You know, that's exactly right, and I really need to take Kim's advice because once you get on and you start checking in the morning, that is a really bad way for an author to start his or her morning is to go online and start reading your reviews because, like you said, for me, if they're just over the top gushy, then I get a little overconfident then and just think, you know, all my words are golden. Perhaps I don't need to polish as much as I used to. And then on the other hand, if they're really, really, wow, rough, then it just sort of shuts me down too, where I'm thinking, mm-hmm. now, what was I doing? Was I really called to do this? And so it's just a bad way to start the day.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. That's fine. But your litmus test pretty much is your social media, because you're pretty much there a lot, and folks understand you.
I think so. Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah, I hope
Kim,
so.
Do you have a question for Anita?
Social media are a little nicer too. They don't do the review thing so much. You know, usually they come on social media if they like your stuff and they support you. They want to interact with you. Usually, people who've given you a bad review don't necessarily want to come on social media, say on your reader page on Facebook, and interact with you. They're not interested. So a lot of times, the social media thing can be a little more, uplifting and upbeat and that kind of thing.
It's a lot more fun.
yeah, that too.
Yeah. Kim,
although
do you
it
have
is
a question
time
for Anita?
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Kim, do you have a question for Anita?
I do have a question for Anita. Anita, 30 years, that boggles my mind. You know, I'm a third of the way there almost. And it's just been so much fun and such a challenge. How have you maintained your freshness and your enjoyment for over that length of time?
Wow, that's a good question, Kim. I mean, that's a good one. I could take a half an hour on that alone, but I will admit, people like just blunt honesty, and I will say I am burnt out. I am burnt out from writing a romance and women's fiction romance. And so I am kind of slowly shutting that down. I may have one in the future come out, maybe one or two, but that will be it. I'll slowly closing down because I just feel still called to write, just as strong as ever. But I feel called to write in another area. So my daughter, who is a better writer than I am, Hillary McMullen, we have started to write a young adult together. And we finished our first...
Cool.
And, we had so much fun. It was such an amazing bonding experience between mother and daughter. And we just really had a marvelous time together. And so that's the direction I would like to go in the future. It seems like just a huge area of ministry. But that is also a place where we cannot get preachy. We are going to have to be really careful with that. And make it, obviously, since we're both Christians, they will be written from a Christian worldview, of course, but we will have to be careful not to be preachy. But anyway, that's what we hope is the direction in the future, is for us to write young adult together.
Oh, that's exciting.
And that's how I will answer your question, is that that's how I'm hoping to stay fresh, is just that I will have to move on to something that excites me again. And and it could be every once in a while we just have to sort of reinvent ourselves, because the industry is changing quite a bit, as we talked about before. And women's fiction and romance, some of the books are selling and some are not. There's just a lot of transition going on now where sometimes historical will sell better, sometimes contemporary, and there's just so many. It's not just the digital world that's changing everything and the hybrid publishing and all of that. There's just a lot of changes, with what people are purchasing, So I just feel like this is a good and new and fresh direction for me.
Well, I wish you well. That is wonderful.
Thank you. Thanks, Kim. I appreciate that.
Interesting. Where can folks find you on social media? Well, where is it that you're at?
Well, you want Kim to answer that too, I'm sure.
Yeah.
We've
discussed that a few times. Go
ahead.
Oh,
did you already? Okay, I didn't. I only got in on the last. You can find me on my website at anitahigman.com, HIGMAN.com, and there'll be a little contact me button, and I always try to get back with everybody who contacts me. And then you can go to my Facebook reader page, and that's easy to find, and I will interact with you there if you'd rather be there. And also on Twitter. So, please email me, and I'll get back with you. I'd love to hear from you.
Very nice. Very nice. So what's your current project right now?
Well, we did finish. Oh, you were talking about Summer's List. Yeah, that was the reason I was on here. I almost forgot what I was supposed to be talking about. But, Moody Publishers published Summer's List. And this was after winter in full bloom, and so we have another season here. And so Summer's List is about a young woman named Summer Snow who has made a bit of a mess of her life, and she can't seem to get out of it. And so her dear grandmother Snow has made what everybody seems to call today a bucket list, but it's really more of an adventure list. And since Summer Snow gave of herself so much of her life and didn't get to go to college and was watching out for her parents before they died, and since she was so generous of heart with all those around her, she didn't really get to live her life growing up. And so her grandmother's giving her this adventure list to do to help her find her way again and to give her some time off from work and actually sort of live, really live and find herself. And so that's what this adventure list is all about. And some of the stuff is just whimsical and silly, and some of it's very serious because she had a childhood friend named Martin Langtree, and she's supposed to go hunt him down and see whatever happened to Martin Langtree. And that's the first thing on the list. So that's how the adventure begins, is her trying to find this childhood friend of hers and then to fulfill the list along with him. And so that's kind of, that's the beginning of it.
Wow, pretty cool. Pretty cool.
Also.
yeah, I would say. I assume, do you have another question for Kim?
I don't think I do, but I've really enjoyed listening in and visiting with you today. And right now my characters are calling, so if it's okay, I'm going to...
Well, it was a lot of fun, Kim. I'm so
excited about writing again.
Yeah, I'm so glad we got to visit, and I'll see you hopefully in Dallas in September.
I would love that.
Yeah. Tug on my sleeve, and I'll buy you a coffee.
Yeah. Oh, that'd be great. Well,
thank you so much
for
being
sharing
on the show,
part of your morning with me. Oh, thank you. I enjoyed it. Happy talking, Anita.
Thanks. Take care.
All right. Bye-bye.
Everybody, Kim Vogel Sawyer. Anita, when you are doing a project, I mean, you've been doing this for a long time, I ask everybody, are you a big outliner? Are you more of an organic writer? What is it that you do?
Well, I guess I do a combination of both, because if you don't do a little bit of planning ahead of time, you can tend to write yourself into a corner that you can't get out of. And you can kind of make a mess of your manuscript in that it may take longer. In other words, you can just write like crazy and not really know where you're going. But the problem with that is you, like I said, you can write yourself into such a corner that it's very difficult to write yourself back out of it. And then the problem is you have a lot more rewriting to do to try to undo everything you've done before, or at least pieces of it, to make it all fit properly. So some planning does seem to be good. So you do need some kind of a roadmap. But I like to think of it that way, is that like you go on a trip in the same way my husband and I have been on trips. We know in general where we're going to go, the main stops and things, but we also love to take side trips, maybe that are unexpected, wonderful surprises along the way. Say if you're in Texas and you suddenly realize that, you know, the bluebonnets are in season and you want to take this jag off the map and go and see some special fields of bluebonnets, you might want to do that and stay at a bed and breakfast that you didn't expect to stay at. And your characters will help you do that. And that they will sort of tell you, and I know it sounds kind of weird, but they sort of tell you in a way. That's just the way the whole nature of this works and the way our minds work. They will sort of tell us as we go along with the story where to make those side trips and what becomes important, maybe things that you hadn't thought of before at the initial planning stage. And that really is the way the creative process works, at least the way it is for me, because everybody's creative process does work a little differently. But I do try to have some planning, and then I allow the characters to kind of take over and do, you know, help me with some surprises and along the way.
Hmm. Interesting. I can't do bed and breakfasts. I did it once. I can't. It's just not my thing. So I would
thing.
Not. Yeah, I would. No, I don't. I don't. I don't. I for some reason, I don't get to get away with just my wife too often. I kind of just like being with her. I don't like sharing her. And went to a bed and breakfast one time. It just isn't my cup of tea. Just just not my
thing. I can understand that because it's very different than, say, going to a resort hotel. Very different because it's very, well, a little more an intimate kind of setting. And so sometimes you will even, we've been in some bed and breakfasts where, you know, you really do share the meal, the breakfast meal with other people at one table, or maybe even, you know, they'll have a little soiree or something in the evening where you'll all sit around and visit. And so, you know, it's a much more, or it may just be run by a family in a very, very simple situation where you spend the time with that family. It is very different than staying, like I said, at a big hotel. Very different experience. Yeah. So I can understand that.
Yeah.
So we try to rotate. We don't do everything bed and breakfast. We definitely rotate different kinds of, you know, situations like that.
Our check-in took, I think it was an hour and 15 minutes. Lady had to tell us about the whole town. And then, yeah, I ate breakfast with other people, and it's just like not happening again. It just wasn't my thing. I looked at my wife first. People talk to my wife. I hate it. It was just, I just look at her. It's like, really? Again? No. So.
No, I really do get that. Yeah, you have to really like bed and breakfast because they really are a unique animal. They really are. So.
My kids keep trying to talk me into going on to a cruise with my wife, and it's like, I really don't want to be trapped with the same people for a week, you know? Just
No. There's a way around that. Yeah, you haven't talked to me
yet.
Yeah,
stay in your room all week.
No, there's a way
yourself.
Around that. We insist. We've been on 4 cruises now, and we figured out how to work the system. And so you just basically, when you get to that, the front, podium there where the guy's deciding where to put you, and they'll put you at the same table or whatever, we just always insist we want a table by ourselves, just a table for two. And the guy gets in a routine at each of those meals, and he already knows when he sees us coming that we do not want to sit at a table with a bunch of people. We just are there, you know, for us. We want a romantic time together on this cruise. We don't necessarily want to share it with a lot of strangers. It's just not our style. I'm sure they're all wonderful people, but it's just not why we're there on the cruise. So we ask specifically, could you have us at a table for two? And you could even reserve that ahead of time. And so there you go. There's the answer to going on a cruise with your wife.
Well, I'll have to think about that. But
I have to think about it.
Yeah, friends of ours are on a cruise right now. And I know, well, he's the husband's a very gregarious guy, so he'll talk to anybody. And I just... I don't. So, maybe sometime later in life, but right now, I can't see that. And I am not someone who, like, when they leave from point A going to point B, I don't deviate. So I couldn't.
Oh, is that right?
I can't do that. I have to get to point B. My wife says I'm the only person who can drive from Levittown, which is outside of Philly, to Orlando, you know, like 20-hour drive, 19-hour drive without saying a word. That's because I just want to drive down there and get there, you know. So, no,
yeah.
I don't do the side stops.
Well, you know, there's all kinds of people in this world, and that is just fine.
Yeah, I mean, as far as the writing goes, I am fortunate that I've been able to interview people from all different types of genres, walks of life, and I really haven't found anybody who's written the same way as somebody else. So I think it's really interesting when someone shares their writing process. That's why I ask everybody. I mean, it doesn't seem like maybe because of lifestyle. I'm sure there's 100 different factors that they just don't. They can only do it certain ways. That's why I think it's interesting if I ever have a panel and there's a bunch of people who are really hardcore outliners and people who are really, what do they call them, pantsers. You know, I just say they're more organic. They get into it. You know, some people really can't deviate from the outline, and some people find it totally stifling. So,
that's exactly right.
What's that like at a conference if you have a room of people who are in there for writing process? Does it get heated? Do people really get into it?
Oh, you mean discussing the writing process? Not really,
yeah.
No. At least not in any circles that I've been. Does it ever get heated? Usually, in fact, I can't even remember that many situations where we've talked about that. A lot of times we end up discussing not so much the writing process, but the actual business process side of it is in a lot of the discussion now. Everything's changed, like I said, not only in the industry, but even in the conferences and even the discussions at the conferences. In other words, the workshops of yesteryear are not the workshops, say, today that you go to at writers' conferences. Many of them have to do with hybrid publishing, which is doing some traditional publishing and doing some indie publishing as well, which is what I'm doing. I'm doing traditional publishing, like right now this book that I'm talking about, Summer's List, is through Moody Publishers, and yet I do have some other books out that are considered more indie publishing, like a book that was released called A Question of Destiny that's selling on Amazon, and so that's in the same women's fiction romance genre. And so I am what's called hybrid. And so there's a lot of workshop, discussions about those kinds of things and the business side and how the industry's changing and those kinds of things. And I'm sure there's plenty of circles, too, and workshops. And there's a lot of workshops, you know, too, that you can go to on this actual skill of writing and learning how to do it and all of that. But the industry is definitely changing, and it's morphing into just something very different.
Do you think that's a good thing or a bad thing?
You know, I really don't know. It's like a bomb has gone off and we're all waiting for the dust to settle and we don't know what the new terrain is going to look like. So, no, I really don't know if it is good or bad. I'm not sure. Right now, it is a little scary. It's a good thing I am able to, you know, I'm praying a lot because, contracts are looking a little differently than they used to, you know. It's just not quite the same. You might not get as many contracts as you did before, or you might get a contract for a different kind of book. Like recently, I was amazed to sell a children's picture book and very happy to. And so I signed a contract for that kind of book, very different than what I was doing before. And very happy to. Soon I'll be seeing the illustrations for this children's picture book, and I'm very excited about all of it and the process. So, you just have to keep an open mind about the future when something like this happens. You know, I still am called to write, but maybe I'm called to write other kinds of things, just like I mentioned before.
Yeah, that's, I forgot what my question was, as far as what we were discussing. Oh, I know. Because of how many projects you have and the length of time, you've seen a major change in how your readers get to connect with you. With the business part of it aside, have you found that to be very liberating?
Liberating. Now, that's an interesting word. I expected you to say something else. I wouldn't necessarily use the word liberating. I do love readers. Anybody out there, I do say, that has ever taken the time to read one of my books, whether fiction or nonfiction or whatever it is, I thank you with all my heart, and I do appreciate you and respect you. But I have to say there are times when social media does not feel liberating. It feels confining and, overwhelming at times because so much of the time we're sort of expected to do, you know, to get the word out, and that's understandable. It's a team effort, and we need to be part of the team in getting the word out. So I'm behind that 100%. It's just I'm not always sure what can I do to help be part of that team experience, to help you get the word out and to find my tribe. And I'm not sure social media is exactly what we need to focus on to get the word out to the tribe, you know, the people, that is, that want to read what I write. And so sometimes in the morning, say if I don't read my reviews and I have time to do something else, then I go and do the social media thing. And it does get very time-consuming. And so you find yourself having less and less time to actually write a book that somebody wants to read. So it's really a balancing act in this new world. So I wouldn't necessarily call it's liberating and fun, I guess, in a way that you can connect now with readers like you never did before, and you can connect with friends and family on Facebook, and all of that's wonderful. But when you count in all the various different kinds of social media, there's so many. It's not just one. There's many kinds, and some new ones coming on the scene all the time. It does get a little overwhelming trying to connect with so many different areas.
Yeah, I just meant versus getting a packet full of letters that somebody wrote 3, 4, 5, 6 months ago. That when you do have a new project coming out, it's kind of so it's a lot quicker, a little more personal.
Oh, you mean actual mail, real mail, snail mail, you mean?
Yeah, I mean, in the past, you wrote a book. If someone wanted to make a comment or talk to you, they would write a letter to the publishing house, and it would be forwarded to you at some point. But now you're able to wake up the day a book's released and get feedback from people and talk to them.
Yes. Now, in that way, since you present it that way versus the old snail mail way, and then trying to wait for that to come in and then getting a note back to them, yeah, this is more liberating because for some reason to be able to get that note out and then to get the address and find it and get the stamp put together and get the whole thing written and to get it in the mail, I mean, it does seem sort of, old school, and it takes a lot longer, it seems like, than popping somebody an email or responding on a Facebook reader page to someone who maybe had a question or wanted to, talk about the book or something. So, yeah, in that way, it is liberating, yeah. I had almost forgotten about that. It seems so long ago, And we do seem to be getting away from the whole just traditional mail. We seem to be getting away from that.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's good or bad, but that's another whole discussion, I guess.
Yeah, back in my day, I used to have to chisel on a stone tablet and then put it on top of a bird and send it somewhere, So I understand all that. Okay, we're getting close to the end of the show. I ask this of everybody. Is there a question today I haven't asked you? Maybe you're hoping I would, or is there a question someone hasn't asked you in your travels, whether conferences or social media, that folks haven't asked you that you're hoping they would? Do you have anything like that?
Well, not so much really a question I don't want to answer. I just hope that I keep hearing that women, adult women, are reading young adult books, and I think they want to see what their daughters are up to, and so they start reading them, and then they get like, wow, I really like this, and I think I'm going to read some young adult books. So it seems like there's a huge audience out there. So I hope and pray that you will keep an open mind out there, and as I travel gradually from women's fiction romance into another genre, I hope that you will follow me over. So thank you for that.
Oh, that's nice. Okay. Well, I want to thank you for being on today. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you so much, Giovanni. It was really lovely talking with you again.
You're welcome here anytime. Everybody, Anita Higman. Earlier in the show, we had Kim Vogel-Sawyer. Yesterday, if you want to go back through the archives, folks, we had Kevin L. Stabinski. Now, tomorrow, we have Nancy K. Grace. She's on at 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. I want to thank everybody for listening. And please, continue to share the show. Help somebody find a new author to them. And I hope everybody has an awesome Canada Day on July 4th if we don't catch you until next week. Thank you, Anita. I really appreciate you being on the show. Have a good day.
Thank you so much. It was fun.
All right, everybody. Bye-bye.
Bye.